Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading this podcast. If you want to listen live, be sure to download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Stop being stupid, people.
All bets are off.
You all suck.
I'm Morenci Unfiltered.
Scumbags!
Get on the Grand Sports Grid. Morenci Unfiltered, the podcast. Let's do this thing. We've been UFC heavy this week, and rightfully so. Because the UFC is back, baby. I'm back, like Frank Costanza, may he rest in peace. But it's been a great time talking about the Last Dance documentary on a weekly basis and talking NBA basketball, college basketball with Pete Annapolis. We're down into the final stretch right now as the Last Dance is set to wrap up. And it's starting to get more intense and emotional as the series goes on. Let's bring in Pete Annapolis right now, RDS television basketball analyst, former assistant coach with the UMass Minutemen, lifer when it comes to hoops. What's going on, Pete? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Gabe. How you doing today?
All right, Pete. It's always a pleasure. Thanks for your time. And just before we get into the Last Dance, it's been a lot of talk about baseball and whether they can come back and whether it's safe or not. And obviously the National Football League still has some racetrack left before they step up onto the field. Although training camp isn't all that far off right now. We're seeing collegiately football really could be splintered, and that could be something that could happen in college basketball as well, Pete. So I'll start off there, actually. What are you feeling? What are you hearing as far as college basketball is concerned? Because from the college football world right now, the commissioners are drawing a line in the sand, and they're basically stating, well, your problem is not my problem. They're not all part of the same league. So basically, the SEC is going to play. You know, they didn't come out and say it, but the SEC is planning on playing. And you know what's going on in California right now. And put it this way, Pete, like the USC Trojans were supposed to open up their season against Alabama at Jerry's World, the Cowboys Stadium. And Alabama are now in talks with TCU because they don't even think USC are going to be able to play. Do you see this in a similar situation as college basketball as well?
I think that definitely the NCAA in terms of college basketball will be looking at what, one, the NCAA football does, but I think they'll be looking at what the NBA does first and foremost, right? So if the NBA starts playing basketball in July or potentially August, from what I hear, then there'll be good possibilities for the college basketball to continue right now and have a season. But if they don't, it's going to be interesting to see how that goes, because as you mentioned, it's not only about the NCAA holding access and control. Each conference really decides what they want to do. So you might have some conferences that are going to want to play football or either basketball, and some might not want to. But I think for college basketball, I think right now there's still a lot of time because the season usually starts in November. They're going to see what the NBA does and see if they're going to continue and try and finish this season.
You know, it's an interesting dynamic. A lot of people, and it's very confusing, like a lot of things that are stupid, but it is very confusing. People like hear, oh, NCAA, like they control everything and they have all this power. They really don't. The NCAA is just there to police the conferences because they don't trust each other, so to speak. So you're seeing in football, like, you know, Mark Emmert has nothing to do with the college football playoffs. Like, he doesn't make any money. He has nothing to do with it. He has no control over it. It's not his entity. But college basketball, they do have a lot more power of because the tournament is theirs. March Madness is the NCAA tournament. I know, and stick with me, people, on this. I know it's like, well, what are you talking about? It's not theirs. Alabama, what do you mean if they're the college football playoff? I mean, the NCAA doesn't organize the college football playoffs. They don't negotiate the TV rights for the college football playoffs. They don't do anything. You know what I mean? The only thing they can do for the college football playoff is they can suspend a kid for smoking weed or something. Like, they don't have, like, they're just sort of the police, so to speak. So you're seeing in college football where the commissioner of the SEC, he can play. And nothing can stop Alabama University from playing TCU's university if they want it. Right? Like, nothing can stop that. But where it gets interesting is, what about the college football playoff? Right? Because then it's like, well, okay, well, what if the SEC's playing and the Big 12 playing, but the Big 10 isn't? And then you sort of get, you know, that's another factor. But right now, all these people are just concerned about getting stuff on TV. But, man, they just can't lose March Madness 2 years in a row. I'll tell you that much. It's one thing losing the $800 million profit that they just missed out on, Pete. But they can't handle losing out on that money again.
No, the timing was terrible when you consider that this is the golden age of college basketball when it comes to March Madness and all the TV revenue and all the excitement, right? Because this is what dreams come true. And I was having a discussion with a couple other people, basketball people, you know, about the G League and having some of the players go directly and not play in the NCAA. And I said, hey, can you imagine if Steph Curry never went to Davidson and never played in the NCAA tournament and had that Elite Eight run, that magical run where they almost
beat Kansas? He's not in the NBA. He won't even right? be in the NBA after, because you're right. They'd be like, you're not good enough to be on a G League team, kid.
Right. And you're arguably talking about the greatest shooter in the history of the NBA. Probably wouldn't even be in the NBA right now if it wasn't for the NCAA. But for all the good things that
so what you're saying is Pascal Siakam will be playing in Athens right now. He'd be playing in the Greek League.
No question. So there's a lot of what ifs, but at the same time, listen, I think there's a misconception that people think the NCAA create all these rules. They just enforce the rules that the schools and administrations provide. So again, it's going to be interesting day by day, month by month. Hopefully we will get some college football. We will get college basketball, because not having the March Madness tournament in 1 year, it really left an empty feeling for a lot of people, just because you don't have to be a basketball connoisseur or basketball expert to love that tournament. Anybody loves to watch that tournament. Anybody wants to gamble on that tournament and to see those Cinderella teams. And I think this year, when I look at Dayton and Anthony Grant's team, this was their legitimate chance as a mid-major winning the whole thing. So hopefully things can get rectified rather sooner than later.
Yeah, I do feel for Dayton. You know what I mean? They just, you know, it came together for them. You know, I don't want to compare it. You know, you almost can't. Not really. It's not the same, but it's almost like the Expos in 94. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, the Expos are never going to win. And then finally there was like, well, it's like, damn, this team could really win. And honestly, it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, Dayton are a cute story. They legitimately could have won the tournament. They were that good.
They were that good and they were that deep. And this was a year where you didn't have a clear-cut favorite in the NCAA. Like in previous years. So there was about 20 teams that thought, hey, you know, if we win a couple of games, we can get hot, that we could win the whole NCAA tournament. To have a mid-major team like Dayton that was top five in the whole year and had a dominant player who was a big guy, who was versatile, and a team that was hot and was well-coached and could play defensively, it was tough. It was tough because a lot of these teams thought legitimately they had a chance to win a national championship. And you never get that chance, right? It's so difficult. You look at some of the greats that you know, never won a championship, some great teams, some great coaches. You look at you know, the great Bill Self at Kansas, won NCAA championship. Syracuse, Jim Boeheim, he's 70 plus years old. He's been coaching 40 plus years. He's only won one national title.
Mello for that. And he only won because he had Mello. Let's be real. Not because of, but out of all the coaching that he's done, it took to have a mega superstar skill
freshman
like Mello to win. Yeah. Like Mello had to get it done for him. Yeah, you know, it's interesting too, because, and even if you're a bigger program, it's like, ah, yeah, we'll be back. But if you're dating, you're like, son of a bitch. Like, really? Like, we, you know, we were that good. What about Obi Toppin right now? And even the NBA draft, God knows about that. There's so much in the air right now. Although it seems like the NBA is starting to sort of, you know, at least sort of piece things together a little bit. Where, what do you make of Toppin? Is he overhyped? Is he a dunker? Does he have a complete enough game for the NBA? What do you make of this kid?
Well, he's a player that has experience, that played a couple of years at Dayton and really grew and developed.
Yeah, he's older, right? He's 23, 24, isn't he?
Yeah, so, and this is not the traditional way of drafting kids in today's NBA. You're drafting kids that are 18, 19. You want them young. You want to cultivate them, develop them, and then hopefully they can become really a good NBA player.
He's currently 22, just to correct. So he's currently 22. March 4th, so he'll be 23 by the time they play next year, put it that way, yeah. Yeah, he's not a young kid by NBA standards.
But as we've seen, there's still a lot of players that have that experience that could come in there and be successful players. You look at more recently guys like Draymond Green or guys like Norman Powell, guys that played 4 years at Michigan State or UCLA, and they become really important players and starters on championship-level teams. But the way the NBA is now is you want to draft that kid, that one and done, 18, 19 years old, and then you want to have those extra years where you're not drafting an older player. But if you look at certain teams right now, you're trying to get the best possible player that you could have. You have NBA general managers and executive front offices that they might not have the luxury of waiting too long. They have to start winning right away. So you get a player like that, and who's been coached by Anthony Grant, as I mentioned, who is under the Billy Donovan tree of coaching. You know that he knows how to play on offense. He knows how to play on defense. I think he's going to come in there right away and be one of the probably the 5-10 best freshmen or rookies next year if we have a season that depending when it's going to start. Is it going to start in December of next year? The draft's going to get pushed back. Listen, I've been talking to a lot of NBA general managers, assistant general managers, some scouts, and a big problem for them right now is when they're evaluating who they're going to draft, they haven't really seen a lot of these players, right? They can't work them out now. They're going on tape. So for them, their job is extremely difficult because you want to bring in a kid and sit him down there and interview him and see what type of person he is and how he answers questions. So I think they're having a difficult process. They're happy that the draft has been pushed back. I think it was the correct idea to do so. But there's going to be a lot of kids, right? They're on the bubble. There's always so many underclassmen that declare for draft game, and there's going to be about 60, 70 that don't get drafted. Then they'll try and get a free agent contract. They'll get into the summer league, potentially the G League. So I think the NCAA and the NBA, they're trying to – it seems like they're working against each other right now. I'm curious to see what happens moving forward and if they're trying to bend the rules to at least have those players go into the NBA directly. I would love for the NCAA to have a rule with those kids stay 2 years at a minimum, selfishly because I want to see them play NCAA and augment and elevate the level of play. But I think we're looking at more kids going back to the traditional guys like Kobe or KG declaring and going straight to the NBA.
Pete Yiannopoulos with us, man. There's a lot to unpack there. You know, something that's interesting, too, they're talking about, you know, the paying the players and all this type of stuff, which I've always been in support of, actually, right? I have been in support of that. But at the same point in time, I brought it up before that it's like, all right, listen, kid, you know, I know you feel like you're getting ripped off right now, but, you know, you're really not. And, you know, you're going to get coached by Coach K. We're going to get you ready for the NBA. You're going to get used to traveling and being a star. And, you know, you're going to look back and say, wow, this really prepared me for the NBA. And then when you leave, we're going to give you the $150K, right? Like, whether you work it out, man. Like, a kid at, like, the place for Akron gets, you know, $10K per year, whatever, at the end. So, you know, that was always my idea, Pete, as opposed to, because, you know, what do you want? You want Trevor Lawrence driving around a Ferrari right now saying, suck it, Steve Sweeney. I've already got 3 million in endorsements already. I make more than you already. You know what I mean? Like, you can see it backfire. Like, look at the kids on the U, like Miami Hurricane. Some of these colleges are already a load to deal with. Imagine these kids with money suddenly, right? And, oh, God, this kid just signed a deal with a nightclub. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, just all kinds of like little things that, you know, would come to be of this. I've always thought that it would be better that, hey, you guys don't care what happens to these kids after, and they don't all make it to pro sports. So I've always thought it would be cool or a good idea that it's like, all right, listen, you stay a year, you get this. You play for 4 years for the University of Michigan. You play for the football team. When you leave here, son, we're going to give you $250,000. You're going to, you know what I mean? And then you're on your own for life after this. We've set you up with a couple of bucks. You've got an education. You can buy a house. Like, I sort of looked at it like that. But, you know, I think I'm looking at it too forwardly, so to speak. But I want, before we get into the last dance and stuff, I want to bring up, it's unique this year, as you stated. Listen, the NFL coaches, Pete, after said, like Sean Payton even said, he goes, you know what? This was great, this virtual draft. He goes, we don't need to be flying around and meeting people and asking them stupid questions. And he goes, we scout them. We know what they can do. And he said the work is already put in and it was just excessive in what the NFL does in preparation. And I've always said that too often. I'm like, guys, you know, you fine. I understand looking a kid in the eye before you give him $60 million. I totally get that. But at the same point in time, from, you know, when people, oh, the combine, this, the combine, listen, man, you've seen the kid play the last 2 years. Like Isaiah Simmons is a stud for Clemson, for the best team in football. He's a good player, right? So, like, you know what he is. The NBA guys, Pete, these, like, GMs, man, they're on their freaking own on this. Like, there is no tape. You know what I'm saying? Like, what, like, I'm not saying there's no tape, but how much tape do you have on James Wiseman? Like, what, you looking at his high school? Like, how much tape is there on James Wiseman? LaMelo Ball, you've got the Australian League tape. The Avila kid, you got the Israeli tape. Anthony Edwards, all right, they've got tape on Edwards. They've seen him play in the SEC. Toppin, they've seen him play. But you hear what I'm saying? Like, you can't screw up your top, like, first two, three picks. So we're still talking about Sam Bowie freaking 30 years later, right? Like, so you got a team, a GM, his job is on the line. It's like, dear God, I got to pick between James Wiseman, who I've seen six times in my life, and LaMelo Ball, who played in Australia, and he's a Ball brother, right? Like, I could see NBA GM saying, anyone want to trade down?
No, it's incredible, and you mentioned it. And it's not the deepest draft pool this year, right? We don't have the...
Yeah, for the record, Pete, I heard the Warriors don't like any of them. Because, you know, the Warriors going to have a big-time draft pick this year. And supposedly the Warriors don't like any of the top players.
No, I mean, Anthony Edwards, okay, fits the profile, 6'5", 225, played for Tom Crean at the University of Georgia. So, you know, there's those comparisons that he could be the next Dwayne Wade when he played for Tom at Marquette.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, you look at what Golden State has, and they got Steph Curry, they got Klay Thompson, they got Andrew Wiggins at the 1-2-3. You would think that, yeah, Wiseman's the guy. You drop the center, but I don't think the way they play that they need.
They don't even like centers.
No, they don't. I mean, they give me Bogut.
And in the modern NBA, center's kind of the odd man out in today's league, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you look at DeAndre.
Unless you can shoot.
Like, he's a, you know, great player. I mean, prospect, big guy. But is that the way you're going to win a championship with a 7'1" center who shoots jump shots? I'm not quite sure. And I look at, you know, it depends what teams want. And you look at the draft, you know, Cole Anthony, you know, a lot of fanfare coming out of North Carolina. His dad, Greg, was a great point guard for the Knicks and for UNLV. You know, he was injured half the season. Do you think, like, he's the legitimate point guard that's going to run your franchise for the next 10 years? So there's a lot of unrest, and they're trying to get a hold of as much tape as they can. But again, do you value the NCAA tournament than you do the regular season for a lot of these players?
No.
Does that count in the moment? I would say probably not as much as back in the day, because guys can get hot. If you're a serious player, you know, they got scouts and they got people that are doing their job. They're going to know. But at the end of the day, you quite don't understand what you're going to get. But it gives them the opportunity where the NFL said, okay, we did it virtually. And that gave them that boost. Everybody was like, oh, my God, this was the greatest thing ever. Because
yeah, but one thing, the NFL. Yeah, exactly. One thing that people forget about the NFL, this is another key, guys. The NFL had their combine. That's
exactly
the thing. They had a combine. There's been no Chicago combine. So, they, you know, some of these GMs haven't even met the kid. Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Berenci Unfiltered, the podcast, NBA and basketball edition continues. Pete, I wanted to get into the last dance, obviously, but... word was there was a poll, an internal poll of 400 players in the NBA. And also there was also another report that seemed to be pretty much confirmed and not denied that sort of a superstar elite, you know, 10 or 12 guys were on a call, a Zoom together the other night. LeBron, Curry, Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, you know, whatever. Basically, you know, a who's who of superstars. And supposedly that was a positive call. And supposedly out of the NHC, you know, they didn't release the exact numbers of what the response was in the 400, but they've sort of leaked it out that it's positive, that it wasn't like, yeah, no, no, we don't want to play. And I like the honesty. I've talked about it on TV too, that the NBA players didn't even say, you know, for the good of America and the championship, they said, man, there's a lot of money on the line here. They understand that it affects the CBA moving forward and it affects the salary cap moving forward. And they're like, if we screw ourselves now, we're screwing ourselves like, and you know, for future contracts. So it's funny how the NBA players are looking at this, but they're not in the same position as baseball. Baseball wants these guys to go on the road for the next 5 months in the middle of a pandemic. The NBA, you're being asked to go to Disney World for 4.5 weeks, right? It's like a different, it's a different scenario, Pete, right? And I even brought it up. I'm like, man, out of the 16 teams, half of you are going to be freaking gone in 10 days anyways. Like, because you're not going to stretch it out. Like, it's not going to be like a game on Tuesday and Sunday anymore. They'll play every second day, right? So these series will be bang, bang, bang. And it'll go rapid fire. But what are you hearing? And I've always thought August, play, you know, August into September is the most realistic, or even September into October, that they're not really in a rush, but they will pull this off in August, September type of thing.
Yes, everything, the people that I've been speaking to, and it's a wide range, right, of executives, some GMs, players, assistant coaches, and
well, even your network. What do your bosses say? What is the desire to ask? Do you guys think you're going to have playoff games even? They don't know, I guess.
They don't really know right now, but I think, you know, they want live sports. That's first and foremost. I think everybody does, but specifically
they paid for live sports.
All right. You know, there's only so much now that they could show, like, classics. Right, people want to see. There's such an appetite for any type of live sport.
Sorry to cut you off, but I know they're reaching. Man, the other night I was on Twitter and I saw NBA TV Canada, whatever, like relive Game 2 of the Raptors versus Orlando Magic first round series last year. I'm like, man, yeah, you guys are out. You guys are reaching now.
No, I mean, listen, it was nice when the pandemic hit, and then there was, you know. Listening or watching some of those older games, and we know that the Raptors had that crazy run to a championship, an unprecedented one, the first time in history. Kawhi shot. There were some great games. But I think right now the players understand that there's so much money on the line right now, and they do believe and have the trust of the NBA that it's going to be safe when they do return. And Jared Dudley really tweeted at Shaquille O'Neal, who said they should cancel the season. He said, He said, bro, there's too much money on the line only for this year, but for next year and the years to come, you know, that basketball-related income, it's going to go down, and this is what these players need. And if you think about it, there's about 40 to 50% of the NBA players that live paycheck to paycheck. So they don't get paid in the playoffs, but the regular season money really counts for them. So I think and I believe that there will be an NBA season. I think that the Orlando site or the Las Vegas site or a neutral site makes sense. And I think, like you, as you said, the TV networks are going to be showing games every night. They haven't showed any for a while, so they're not going to be stretching games from Wednesday night. Okay, the next game is Sunday, and then maybe a Tuesday, Thursday again. So there's going to be games quick. I anticipate that there's going to be basketball in the NBA probably August, September. Best case would be sometime in July, but there needs to be a training camp of at least 3 weeks.
You know what's amazing too, and I know a lot of people are like, and I've talked about this in the past. You're like, wow, yeah, paycheck to paycheck. What are you talking about? People that, you know what I mean, common people are living paycheck to paycheck. Guys in the NBA aren't. But C.J. McCollum recently stated that there's 450 players in the NBA. He said he thinks about 150 of them live paycheck to paycheck. 150. He goes, the exact quote, I would say there's some guys in the league that are hurting right now because obviously a work stoppage is in place. There would be a pay stoppage. We're on pace to lose about 23.5% of our income. I like how he knows the exact number.
He went to Lehigh, right?
Yeah. Like, it's just like these guys are like, it's all about the dollar. He's like, hey, listen, we're about to lose 23.5% here. He goes on to say the median salary of an NBA average player is $2.5 million, according to Basketball Reference. The average salary of an NBA player is about $7 million. The minimum salary is $893,000. So he goes, I think there's a lot of guys going to be hurting. Maybe, and then he goes on, I think a lot of guys are going to be hurting right now because people on the minimums are people that just didn't budget correctly and never expected something like this to happen. Maybe they loaned money or gave money to people in their family. Maybe they borrowed a lot of money before. And you know that's the case too, right? You know that's the case of younger players. It's like, dude, just give me the $5 million now. I'll get it here. I got this contract coming. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and McCollum goes on, a lot of guys in the NBA are being asked to take care of multiple people in their family. Now there's a work stoppage, and it's hurting everyone, not just America. So he goes on to say, you know, not everybody in the NBA is filthy rich like LeBron is. And, you know, you brought it up, too. There's a trust factor, at least with Silver and the players. They're on the same page. They're partners. I don't think it's ultra safe, Pete. But at the same point in time, it can be done. You know what I mean? It can be done. They're going to have to quarantine, though. And not like, I don't mean, you know, it's not like they have to be in lockdown. But they all have to show up. They would all have to show up to their practice facilities. They would all have to get tested all the time. Then when they show up in Orlando together, the entire league, like the UFC did, all 450 guys, not so it would only be 200, whatever the players plus everyone else, but they'd have to get tested again. And then they'd have to all be isolated away from society. Right. And, you know, but it's only 5 weeks, Pete. So it is doable.
No, it's definitely doable. And I got my hands on a document that was sent out to all the NBA presidents and general managers about the first phase of how they're going to really bring back the players to their practice facilities. So you'll only have specific trainers and second row assistant coaches, the ability to work out players, head coaches and first row assistants are not allowed. And this is fluid. There's been other documents that came up really in terms of the products to clean the basketballs, the floors, the bench areas. There's going to be thermometer checks every time you enter a building, every time you leave a building. They're so thorough right now, the NBA. So if there's a league that I think will always protect its players, but at the same time try and bring out a great product, it's the NBA. It's always a risk. I guess when you bring everybody there and fly them in, then you have them quarantined for 14 days, and then you start having training camp. And then, you know, what does it look like for coaches? What does it look like for TV? Who's allowed in the building? It's going to be incredible. It's going to be like summer league. It's going to be like pickup. Can you imagine? Home court advantage is gone. you know, you look at some of the classic games where the home court, the fans help teams win, and now it's going to be neutral for everybody, neutral
type like
games. So why not? Let's do it. And I think I like what Adam Silver said. The history means a lot. They're an innovative league, but you can't go back to, you know, 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 5. It has to be 4 out of 7 for the legitimacy of the NBA.
I don't mind 3 of 5 in the first round. I mean, that you know, that used to be that way.
Yeah, the days of Michael Jordan in the Last Dance.
Yeah, the Cavalier shot. Yeah, that was game 5.
Yeah, imagine if it was probably game 7, the Cavaliers with their depth and their quality probably beat the Bulls. Who knows? But at the same time, I'm not quite sure what they want to do in terms of playing games. I don't think teams that don't deserve to be in the playoffs should be here. And again, it's a neutral side game. They can get hot. Again, I'll leave it to them. But as long as we can get basketball back or sports back, I'm a happy man.
And one thing as well, you brought it up sort of briefly with the coaches. I talked about this on Game Time Decisions. And, you know, this is just for the people that, like, just blindly don't understand how complicated these things are. I mean, the highest risk group that are exposed to the virus are people 60 years and older. Also, people with pre-existing conditions. Well, Jim Boeheim is a 75-year-old cancer survivor. Roy Williams has had too many heart attacks, Pete, on the court, like, in the last couple of years, buddy. You know what I mean? His weird little collapses and stuff where he just, like, faints and, you know what I mean? Roy Williams is 74. Coach K is, like, 70. Like, people don't seem to understand this. So, yeah, we're playing. Because I bring this up because the University of Tennessee head medical, the dean of medicine of the University of Tennessee, is the dean. He's the medical advisor for the SEC conference. And he is advising that any coaches that are 60 years old or older should not be around. And same with professors. Like, if school opens, that it's not a good idea to have, if you're 60 years old or older, to be there. And if you're a professor, if you can teach remotely, good. If you want to retire, fine. And if you want to wait it out, they won't fire you. And they said, well, what about coaches? And he actually said, well, do you think it's any less dangerous for the individual if he's a teacher or a coach? He said it's the same thing. And like I said, like, Jim Boeheim wouldn't make it, Pete. You know what I'm saying? Like, he'd have to say, I can't do this. So he'd have to coach remotely. You know what I mean? There's a lot of freaking challenges to this. There's no coincidence that there's talk that Mike D'Antoni's going to retire, right? That they're either going to play this playoffs, he'll play it, he'll go for one last run here with the Rockets. He's 69 years old, right?
Unbelievable.
He doesn't look 60. I know, man. What a stud. Doesn't look 69, right? But, man, he's 69 years old. And he's got a lot of medical conditions already.
Yeah, Greg Popovich as well with the Spurs.
Yeah, he's done. Oh, yeah, Pop would be done.
I think there's no question when you look at some of these coaches in the NCAA, God bless them. I loved every single game they've coached, and they've been great for the game. But, I mean, it's time for Coach K and Jim Boeheim and Roy Williams.
But what a way to go, Pete.
Pass the torch. But this, like, yeah,
can
this
you
is
imagine?
Tough.
There's not even like a goodbye. It's like, listen, we're going on without you, and you're too old to be here.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible that they've stayed there so long. I mean, why not? They love their job. They've been successful. They got great assistant coaches that do most of the brunt work. But you're right. What a way to go right now. You know, Vince Carter, right? You know,
yeah.
We saw his last game. What does it mean? Like, this was such an incredible year. Probably the first year in the NBA, Gabe, where there wasn't a legitimate, you know, favorite. Golden State, they made 5 consecutive finals. They were the favorite. This year,
Raptors, we were the favorite.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you look, the Raptors at 46-18.
Nah, the Bucks were the favorite, but you're right. The Bucks, Lakers, and Clippers. That's according to the odds makers. You know what's crazy? I actually saw the Vince thing live. I was doing a show at the FanDuel Sportsbook, and I'm on the air, so all the screens are up, and the sound is down, obviously, you know, because I'm on the air. And I look up, and... And Vince actually hit the damn 3, too, right? Of course he did. So he hits the damn 3. And I saw everyone, like, stand up, and players were hugging him. And it was like, Well, you know, why are you here? It's not the last night. And then it was like, oh, it might be the last night, actually. It was just sort of like they knew. I don't know. It was that weird special moment. You're right that Vince goes out like that. But he hit his last shot. So, you know, that's Ledger. What a year for the NBA, Pete. I was thinking about it. Starts off with the China stuff. David Stern passes away. Kobe dies in a helicopter crash. You know, you have this, you know, the pandemic shuts the league down. Rudy Gobert is at the center of coronavirus in America. So, like, it's actually, like, that was, like, when people took it seriously that night. That night is what changed America. That's what changed America that night, Pete. That game, that night.
I remember that. I was sitting there watching it, and it was like, wow, they're actually going to cancel an NBA game right now. And the NBA decided to cancel their season. And I was sitting at home. It was like 8 o'clock. And then one of the shows on RDS, the nighttime show called Antisham, they called me up and they're like, hey, let's talk about the NBA. So I put on my suit. I dressed up, went to the studio. And I was there in about half an hour. And we're talking about what the NBA did in terms of canceling that game and subsequently canceling the season. So, listen, a lot of things have happened with the pandemic that, you know, luckily, our eyes have been on Michael Jordan in the Last Dance and what that looked like. But, you know, when you look at Jordan's career, and it's all about winning. It's all about championships. And there's so many people right now, and you mentioned D'Antoni. You know, what does it look like for the legacy of James Harden, right, and Russell Westbrook? I mean, they're one of the great players of just this generation. They got zero NBA championships. And this is a year where, okay, probably – pre the Clint Capella trade, they thought they had good chances. I think they still believe they can, but there's this Kawhi win.
The small ball stuff was working for them before the shutdown. Actually, it was working more than it wasn't for them. The Rockets were actually playing good ball actually before this happened.
I tell you one thing, Gabe. Yeah, you know, Harden and Westbrook in the playoffs, best 4-7, and I think the way their mindset is right now with all you know, the difficult times that they face, the adversity and the losses. Hey, I don't think they're afraid of playing, you know, the Clippers or the Lakers or the Nuggets. So the West was going to be tantalizing the East. I mean, can you imagine if we open up Boston and Philly, you know, Joel Embiid for what, you know, all the hype.
That's great.
Can he finally, you know, get it done? The Celtics.
I just love it that I hate them both, Pete, and one of them would be gone. It would be like, good, play each other. Oh, no, perfect. The East would be over the top. Like the Celtics would be capable of winning, you know, running the table, or they'd be capable of getting eliminated in the first round. You know, even Kyrie Irving. I mean, Kevin Durant, they said, oh, Kevin Durant won't play. You never really know, but they said Kevin Durant wouldn't play. But, bro, even Kyrie back and stuff, he could get super hot and start dropping 55. Like, it really would be sick, and it really would have that playground street ball feel without the fans and stuff. It would get intense fast. Like, you know, players would say, oh, yeah, by halftime, it was real. Like, you know, it would get intense. But we got to get into the Last Dance. And we have one Last Dance here on the podcast where NC Unfiltered continues. Of course, Spotify, Apple, iTunes. Get on to Grid. Last Dance next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey
Pete, I always love talking basketball with you. We could talk hoops for hours, but we got to get into The Last Dance. And you know what? Just to get in the frame of mind, actually, I've actually had The Last Dance on DVR playing in front of me, actually, while we've been talking. And, man, there's just so much, actually. And we'll have next week to wrap it all up after. But, forget about Jordan right now. Scottie Pippen not going back into the game. And even after all these years later, it's amazing how people debated the handshake stuff. This one's not really as debatable. And it almost is like freaking crazy, isn't it? That like, that like you can understand that happening, Pete, in like the first game of the year. All right, listen, who coaches the guy now? And Pippen gets pissed off. I mean, and listen, LeBron got pissed off, and you could argue Dave Black got fired not soon after. Remember Dave Black called a play that wasn't for LeBron at the end of the game? And he got fired not soon long after that. So this stuff happens, but not going back in, and then Kukoc hits the damn shot after the fact. Come on, man. Like, what's your take on all that?
I remember it happening, right? Like it was yesterday, and the whole season without Jordan, and the Bulls were competitive. They won a lot of games. Kukoc came in, kind of sort of was – embrace it to the new NBA, but you had a lot of pride with that Bulls team. They were the defending champions. And then Pippen really took over, right? He was the All-Star Game MVP. He was the face of the franchise right now. But to not want to go on the court in the playoffs at home, I could understand your frustration, and this happens all the time. Players are pissed off. They'll swear at the coach. You know, they want the ball or they want to be on defend a certain player. But to not go on the court, I think really that tarnished Scottie Pippen's legacy. And the crazy part about it is, luckily for the Bulls, is that Kukoc made the shot. And then, you know, Cartwright, you know, Big Bill, right, grabs it there and never hardly talks too much. He gave him a stern talk. He apologized. And then they moved forward. And then Michael came back. But can you imagine that happening today in this world? You know, star player doesn't want to go on the court. But the reason Phil Jackson said it is because during the regular season, Kukoc hit some of those game winners. People forgot Kukoc was 6'11", and with about 1.8 seconds left, he can't really dribble the ball or maybe one quick dribble. He's just a big target that he could catch and shoot, and he had that motion. So, again, it was just one of those parts of the legacy of the Bulls in the 90s with Pippen and Kukoc. But at the end of the day, they got back together. And then Pippen was showing his shoe to Michael and say, hey, come back. How about him and B.J. Armstrong having breakfast and telling him, come into the gym? I think the last two episodes really got really much better in my perspective, Gabe, because I knew a lot of these things that happened. I'm not a guy that didn't know anything about Jordan, but now I'm seeing the behind the scenes. And I think this is what guys like me and you want and get to see, right? Guys like B.J. Armstrong. And how about Michael Jordan, you know, getting stripped by Nick Anderson and losing the ball and having a turnover?
Yeah,
people don't
seem
to remember that, right? But Jordan never missed. Jordan never had a turnover. Oh, yeah, he did. And they lost to the Magic when he came back that year.
You know what sticks? A couple of things, too, is there's so much talk about how the Bulls, like, were terrorized and tortured by the Pistons, but it really is almost cruel and unusual punishment that MJ saved a lot of his performances for a building that's right outside my window right now. And MSG, I wish I was here to be there, you know, to be in the building for some of those games. But the intensity factor and how we just own the Knicks, is unbelievable. But it's almost like now when you look back and the one guy – the one guy that sort of can kick back and say, you know what, man, F Michael Jordan, man, is Horace Grant, right? Like, Jordan called him a snitch, said, you're the one that's leaking all this stuff after the fact. And Horace said, you know, even now, that's bullshit. He goes, I don't care what he says. He goes, did I talk to him? Yeah, because I wasn't like some sort of like major, you know. He said it was everybody. And that's the whole thing. Jordan was just so upset, and it was everybody, right? It was the coaches. It was Kerr. It was everybody. Everybody was talking. And, like, I don't know why Jordan's surprised, though, if he's a dickhead to everybody, that they're going to say some things about him in a book, right? Like, I don't know why he was so surprised by that. But, and then Horace Grant beats them. They get the revenge, right? Like, Grant wins, and then like walks off the court in Chicago talking smack. It's got to be a good feeling that you just beat Michael Jordan like that. And I know it wasn't for a championship, but the fact that Jordan called, like, you and him don't get along. You have that history. You won together. And Horace Grant basically, like, just went off and started slamming balls all over the place, blocking shots. Had to be a great feeling for him.
It was an incredible feeling for him. And I loved Horace. And, again, he was that third guy. Right in those first two championships behind Jordan and Pippen.
And remember what Pippen said earlier in the documentary too, Pete, that Horace was the one guy that didn't fully buy into being in Jordan's shadow. He didn't like it.
Well, listen, you know, guys like Chris Bosh and Kevin Love had to be that third wheel.
Yeah.
There's always a third wheel when there's, you know, the alpha males, you know, in a duel like Magic and Kareem and Kobe and Shaq. And then here you had Jordan and Scottie Pippen. But again, it's funny that Jordan was upset and he called him a snitch. I mean, Jordan had dinner and every night with Ahmad Rashad. I mean, he told him everything that was going on, right? Rashad knew what was going on. But I think,
well, isn't that one thing with Jordan? And I love him, but it sticks out. He's incredibly thin-skinned and he's a hypocrite. Like, he says everything about everyone. He, you know what I mean? And then he gets upset if someone even looks at him, as we see. Everything's a slight to him, but he has no problem. I get it. You're Michael Jordan, but not everybody is just going to not say anything back to you, right?
Exactly. I mean, how about, you know, them focusing on him punching out Steve Kerr? But it was Steve Kerr that threw him an elbow in his chest. I mean, again, this is a Michael Jordan documentary, and he controlled the narrative. But
I like what Jordan said. He goes, I've always respected Kerr. He didn't back down. He stood up for himself, and he competed.
Of course, and a lot of teams, and all championship teams, had that type of turmoil in the locker room. It's not always fun and games for 82 games in the playoffs. And I think when you look at Jordan, you know, retiring and the way his dad, unfortunately, tragically was murdered, and then him playing baseball, and then he didn't want to be a scab, and then he comes back. And I think you got to give credit to Orlando. I mean, Penny and Shaq and Nick Anderson and Horace Grant, they took care of business. But it was interesting, right? Like, they beat the Bulls. They go to the finals. They got swept by the Rockets. And then the next year when they play the Bulls again, they got swept by the Bulls. So they went back-to-back sweeps and losses. It was kind of interesting when I looked at that. And then I looked at, you know, the Charlotte Hornets in the second part of three-peat. And you see Anthony Mason, part of the Charlotte Hornets.
Glenn Rice.
Right, and that was a good team, and David Wesley and the late, great, you know, Bobby.
It's funny, though, because B.J. Armstrong said, yeah, he goes, I'm on Charlotte now. And I love B.J. It was great. It's great B.J. still has the baby face. Years later, he's old, and he's still got the same baby face. I like what he said. He goes, every player has their moment. He goes, that was my moment that night. And he goes, just, man. You know, just everything was going in, and they knew after BJ glared at Jordan, walks past and glares at the Bulls bench. Oh, I love it in the documentary. Glenn Rice goes, I knew we were screwed, man. He goes, we all even sat in the room. He's like, man, we pissed Jordan off for real tonight, man. They were like, we're screwed. We pissed him off for real.
And I think that's the big difference when you look at Michael Jordan's legacy, Gabe, is that everybody feared Michael Jordan. And when he's on the court, and I think that, you know, a lot of players fear Tom Brady when he had the ball in his hands, right? Because they knew they were going to lose. Oh, they won again. And this is what Jordan had, and he had that respect from the other players. They went after him. They couldn't stand him. But at the end of the day, they're like, man, it's Mike. And Mike just had that ability. Poor LeBradford.
Are people scared? Oh, yeah. Well, why would he do that to that kid? So that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, Pete. So
he's a little bit of a narcissist,
Michael.
Some Michael
kid
Jordan.
That no one's ever freaking heard of forever. His kid's name hasn't been brought up ever before. Just, he has a night. He goes off. For people who don't know, LeBradford Smith, a kid on the Wizards. Not a star or anything. He's just a kid on the Wizards. Just a dude. And he went off. What did he score? 27, 31 or something?
37
points. And Jordan was guarding him. Like, it was like Jordan was on him type thing. Like, you know, he was mad. And people were like before, like, oh, Jordan's going to kill this kid. And the kid went off for 37. And he wasn't even, like, it in Jordan's face. He almost, like, looked scared of Jordan when he was shooting over him and stuff. And what happened the next time they played, Pete? What, he scored 37 in the first half, huh?
Yeah, 36 in the first half. He just went after him the whole time. Finished with 47 points. Michael Jordan. And I remember Bradford Smith because he played at the University of Louisville. And I used to watch those teams with Everett Sullivan and Purvis Ellison. Smith was a great guard.
Great hairdo.
And here you got this dude. He's like, good game, Mike. And he just made it up. And, you know, that's how competitive he was. And how
We should add, that's it. Then after Jordan was all pissed, and Jordan told guys in the room, that kid said, good game, Mike, to me after. It wasn't true. That's why I like the whole George Karl blowing him off in the restaurant. I don't really know what really happened there. He goes, I can't believe George Karl didn't talk to me. I'm like, I don't know, dude. I mean, you're the one that plays head games. Like, you know what I mean? Not him.
Yeah, that's crazy, right? George Karl didn't want to come and give you respect. They're playing against each other in the final. He's a competitor. And Jordan, well, I'm going to show it to Karl. And then Gary Payton was great. The Sonics had a good team. Listen, at the end of the day, they all had their opportunities to beat the Bulls. They didn't quite get it done. But again, you know, when you look at that 96 team, bringing in Rodman with Jordan coming back and being so upset at losing and being eliminated and filming Space Jam and then inviting some of the guys to play against them, it's just great TV. It gives us a perspective of seeing how these guys were. But I'll tell you this. If I'm a New York Knicks fan and you're right next to the Garden right now, Kate, how tough might has to be? You couldn't beat Jordan the Bulls so many times. You came so close. And the year that he was gone, you had the chance to beat the Houston Rockets. John Starks, man, had that game. And poor Patrick Ewing. He's like, I don't want to talk about that. I don't even want to see it. This guy just beat him over and over again. And what great performances back at the Garden. 55 points, fourth game back after retirement. How about
that? Yeah, and the crazy thing is, and Ewing, poor guy. He's like, you know, he goes, I had a monster night that night, too. He goes, I had a monster night. I don't know, you know, he's like 30-something. He goes, I killed it. He goes, but, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you know what I mean? It's just one of those things. Yeah, it is just so captivating. And, you know, I'm really curious to see how they wrap it up and, you know, the intensity factor of it. It's clear, though. Jordan, when he said winning has a price, and you can tell, you know what I mean? Like, there's not, you can tell. Like, I've always wondered about that. Like, you know, how happy was he winning? He was happy in the moment. You wonder after the fact. You and I talked about it last week, actually, about how it must eat him up now that he's not, like, ultra successful as an owner / executive in the NBA. And you know what's crazy, too? A colleague of mine had a good point about Mike Tyson coming back. And he thinks it's because of his documentary that Tyson sort of saw this. And Tyson's not fully coming back, but he might fight Evander Holyfield, actually. That's the deal. I mean, it's reeling up that Vegas have set odds for it. And Tyson's a -350 favorite. But that it influenced him. But let me ask you before we get out of here, we've got like 2 minutes or so. Going back to the Raptors, thinking back to just how big it was to beat those guys at that time, how big was that Raptors win, man, when the Mighty Mouse and Stoudemire beat them? That was the biggest Raptor win in franchise history at the time.
Oh, it was. It was. And there wasn't too many great victories for the Raptors. You know, when they came up in 1995, started their franchise, and Mighty Mouse, Damon Stoudemire was
Yeah, I bet
incredible.
On the Bulls that day. And I remember watching the game thinking, Raptors never win. And here they are about to beat Jordan and the Bulls.
Can you imagine, right, 25 years ago or about 20-plus years ago seeing, and you look at all the Raptors that you know, played over the years, the Eric Montrosses, the Walt Williams, you know, Jimmy King, Zan Tabak. They were tough at the beginning, man. They were tough to watch. But again, when you got to play against Michael Jordan, the Bulls, and win that game, and I think, you know, everything counted for the Raptors in terms of growing that franchise. And having those years with Vince Carter and Oakley being part of that team and Antonio Davis, they couldn't beat Iverson. And then the struggles with DeRozan and Lowry and the losses to Cleveland and then ultimately making it all happen and, you know, bringing a championship. So credit to Masai Ujiri, man. He made the right moves. He built the team to win an NBA championship. And as a Raptor fan, as a Canadian, you have to be so proud because these type of things never happen in the NBA. Only the big teams really win in the NBA, Gabe. You know that. Warriors, Lakers, Spurs, Celtics, the Bulls. You know, the Pistons won a couple here and there. Like, who else won an NBA championship, right? It's always the big powerhouse teams with the Hall of Fame players. And the Raptors are probably one of the teams that really didn't have that.
There's only been, and, you know, I talked about this last year, actually. Off the top of my head, Pete, I think over the last 50 years, 12 teams have won.
Right.
Like if you look through the 80s, man. It was the Celtics and the Lakers. The Sixers won once. It was the Sixers. Sixers won once with Dr. J. And it was the Lakers. Jordan dominated the 90s. Kobe and Shaq won all the time. And the Warriors won. You can count on your hand, actually. You're right. That's why it makes it.
Houston won too.
Oh, Houston.
Right in the 90s.
Yeah, when Jordan wasn't there.
Then 99, the Spurs won. And then they won four of the ones in the 2000s. The Lakers.
Yeah, the Spurs mix in a title every couple of years in the mix there. You're right.
You know, so it doesn't happen, right? That's the NBA. You have those one, two, three superstars on the same team. You know,
then, don't forget. Don't forget the Raptors, too. I remember, man, it was a pain. It really pissed me off. Actually, to this day, I'm still pissed about it. Against the Nets. They couldn't beat the Nets, and it was so rigged. Kevin Garnett had, like, 13 fouls. He just stayed in the game. He didn't leave the court.
You're right.
I was like, dude, your fouls, like, I remember, like, watching, yelling at the TV. I was like, what is that? Like, your eighth foul, bro? You know what I mean? And then Pierce hits the shot. I was like, oh, God. Like, there was a lot of misery over the years, but it was so satisfying. We got to get out of here. But that's the one thing about the league being shut down now. I don't mind. I like the fact that we're the champs still. We got to get out of here. Get on the grid.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.